Inside Scoop Live. Hi, I'm Irene Watson, and I am your host for today and sitting in for our regular host, Winnie Watson. Today, and you will know why, I am so delighted to be speaking on the phone with Mary Nell Lund. She is the author of a memoir, The Normal Side of Insanity. So stay tuned, because today we're really going to get into the emotional and transformational aspects of a woman that was a victim as a child of incest and sexual and emotional abuse. Mary Nell is able to talk about her past and really give hope and encouragement for healing to so many people. I hope that listening to Mary Nell today will give you an inspiration that you may need in the event that you have something that you just really need to address. But before we talk to Mary Nell, I wanted to just give you a little information about her. She was born in Lake Benton, Minnesota in 1951 and grew up in a home of abuse and mental illness. Mary Nell weaved a childhood out of life filled with mental illness, drug addiction, incest, and abuse. She grew up on a poor man's farm trying to weave out her childhood in a very dysfunctional family. And today she has given many speaking engagements on the topics of abuse, alcoholism, and incest. Mary Nell has also written articles on this topic as well as other topics. She has published a short story article for a local newspaper, and she is a self-accomplished expert in the field of abuse and has taken her life of being a victim and turned into being victorious. Hi, Mary Nell.
Hi, Irene.
I'm so glad to be the one that's interviewing you today. This is quite a timely topic, and specifically that so many things are coming up in the media about abused children, and I'm just really looking forward to talking to you today. You've written this memoir, and you've really, really exposed a lot about being abused as a child. So for our listeners, Mary Nell, would you just explain to us so that the listeners can get on the same page as us?
Sure. The reason I went into in-depth about my childhood is because, to me, you can't jump in the middle of an abuse story. You need to start at the beginning of the abuse. And while it was extremely hard to write, and I told it very bluntly, but to me, abuse is a very blunt topic, and there are no words to gloss it over with. And I wanted to be able to, you know, have readers, listeners, educators get a firsthand account of what it's like from being a small child and going through that and how I viewed every perpetrator that I had. And then, you know, I tried also to say, well, you know, I've got to understand that I'm writing this with the thoughts of an adult, so I had to take myself back into my childhood and how I responded as a child. And I think that's very important when you start looking at the topic of abuse. A lot of times the guilt that comes with, saying being an incest victim is because we look at it through the eyes of an adult. And so we already have all our vocabulary and our how we view things already set up. And as a child, you know, a child is totally innocent. We don't have the vocabulary to fall back on to describe what's being done to us.
So when you went back as a child, and of course into the words of you as a child, what did you as the incest victim look like?
What did I look like?
Yeah, what does that whole situation look like to you as an adult now, observing what you as a child went through and in the terms and views of that child?
I guess that's where my title just literally fell into my lap. It was like when I look back, I was the only somewhat normal functioning person in that entire family. And of course, I can't even say that I was totally normal because I don't really know what total normal is when you grow up in that. But that's probably the biggest thing I look back on. And, you know, through the years of speaking about it, as always, what I found so profound to me at the end of my speaking engagement was the same thing. How did you survive it? How do you deal with it today? And again, you know, if that's all you know as your normal, that's what you base things on through life. And I saw so much bitterness and hatred and misery. I knew that and I hoped and prayed that I would never portray that in my own character.
So, as the child, what were your feelings at that time when you were being the victim?
I remember feeling very alone, very much not a part of anything. I didn't feel like I belonged to family. It wasn't a feeling of belonging. It was a feeling of I was going to be hurt. I just didn't know when or by who or if it was going to be verbal or sexual. It's like a cat. You know, when you see a cat, you know it's going to lunge at you, but you don't know when. That's how I felt as a child. I looked at all of them. They're going to do something. I just don't know what or when.
Did you know that what was being done to you was actually wrong, or did you just suspect that? Or, you know, as a child, we looked at our parents to teach us things, and, you know, this was the abuse was done by your parents, and so there must have been a lot of mixed messages, because it sounds what I'm hearing is that inside you knew that this was wrong, but this continued to happen.
I don't know that I had the understanding of it was wrong. I often wondered. I knew I was sad. I felt so sad. And I looked at other kids and I saw they were happy. And so what I did is I wondered if that's what they went through at home. And if so, how come they were happy and I wasn't? And as far as mixed messages, yes, I had them. I knew clearly that my mother had no time or inability to tolerate me. On the other hand, with my father, I knew that he loved me, and I learned so much from him. And, you know, normally someone on the outside that probably hasn't experienced this, they think, well, I would just hate him. And it's like, that's that gray area. It's not that easy, because if I hate him, then I have to hate myself, because he gave me my sense of humor, my love of, you know, wildflowers, just so many things. There were so many things that he taught me. He taught me patience. He taught me how to lose in a card game. And it wasn't total abuse all the time. And so that was, you know, very conflicting for me, and very much as an adult struggling through it. I struggled, really struggled with the concept of should I love him or should I hate him? And then it was like one day, you know what, this is not my decision. This is God's decision. It's not for me to judge. I will take the good, and I will try to forgive the bad. I know that the bad shaped me. I know that I lost my childhood of it. It's like, yes, I can still laugh, and as a child, I still sat on a swing. But a child no longer looks at the male adult with that innocence. You know what they're capable of doing to you. That is the one message I wanted to get across in what you lose in losing that childhood, because it's hard. Some people say, well, she's still swinging and playing, but it's what you're thinking. You've lost that child innocence, and you never get that back.
Yeah, I can certainly understand that. You mentioned that your mother had no tolerance for you. And so what was her action, reaction to you as a child?
I always felt like I was her slave to keep her house clean. I had to help bathe her. And as I got older, she put me in situations where I had to keep secrets about her affairs with other men and whatnot. And that got to be too much for me to handle. So that's when I, you know, went to my dad and told him that about Mom, you know, cheating on him and stuff. The only time Mom told me she loved me was she would leave a note on the kitchen table. She always called me Nanelle. And she'd say, Nanelle, do the dishes, wash the floors, love Mom. But I also knew, because the few times I forgot or maybe didn't get everything done on her chore list, there was no love. And so for me, love was tied about what I could do for her. As a child, it's very hard to do, and that's a hard chore to put on a child, that you've got to figure out what to do and how to move so that your mother loves you.
So how old were you when you had to start doing chores?
The first time, I must have been 6, 7 years old when she put a chair in front of the ironing board and had me get up there on my knees, and I had to start ironing. And I burnt my arm. And she said, that's why you got to be careful around an iron. And I remember starting cooking the same way, pulling a chair up to the stove and standing on it and reaching over to the burners and stuff. We had silo filling crews. I lived on a farm, and so various neighborhood farmers would come over. And, you know, they would have, in the fall, they would help each of the farmers get their crop put in, the corn chopped in the silage. And so, you know, we had to feed them. And it was me putting the roast in. My dad would help me get the potatoes on and stuff. But I don't think I was more than 8 or 9. And between Dad and I getting this meal all prepared and serving it, and, of course, I learned at a very early age that the farmhands got fed first and then whatever was left, you know, then I could sit down and eat, mainly because Mom was in and out of mental institutions or just plain gone. Mm-hmm. Her happiness was turning out of that driveway, and her whole demeanor changed when she turned in that driveway. She hated it. It was, the farm to her was like a prison, and I was the opposite. I loved the farm and, you know, seeing yeah. things grow.
You had mentioned, Mary Nell, that your mother was having affairs, and you had told your father about that. And so what was his reaction at that time?
That was the first time that my dad ever told me he loved me. I always knew he loved me, but it was not verbalized on any continuous basis whatsoever. And I actually broke out in hives. I mean, I was so upset, and I thought, I have to tell him what's going on. And I know that he just sat and bit on his pipe. He smoked a pipe, mm-hmm. and he kept rubbing his thumb inside the palm of his other hand and looking down. And when I got done, he just told me that he loved me, and he thanked me for telling him. Then my next fear set in is because I had never really seen him mad. I didn't know how he was going to react, because all he said to me, I used to go out in the barn and do chores then, mm-hmm. and all he said to me was, stay in the house here, and when Mom gets home, send her up to the barn. And then it really hit me. I thought, wow, is he going to kill her? Is he going to kill?
Uh-huh.
I mean, it was, you know, I was thrown into so many adult stressful situations that a child should have never been put in.
How old were you at that time when you talked to your father?
I was 15 at the time.
Oh, okay. And the incest was already happening.
Right.
Before then.
Right. It started when I was 6 years old.
And continued until you were?
Probably with my dad. I would say that went on until I was 11 or 12. And
okay.
With my cousin, that went on until I was probably 15.
So by the time that you were told your father about your mother's affairs, the incest had stopped.
Right.
And so what was your relationship like at that time? And it's like I'm sort of frowning and thinking, wow, you know, you had the ability someplace within you to be able to go to him and talk to him.
Well, it's like the lesser of two evils. I don't, you know, certainly what my dad did to me was wrong, very wrong, and it had its profound effects on me. But when I look at the two people, he was the safer one of the two to be around. He was more predictable. The daytime was fine, absolutely
mm-hmm.
fine. And with Mom, there was no predicting what she would do or say. I had no clue about her. I mean, it's like you would think, you know, a mother and daughter would have some sort of connection. There was nothing there.
So I'm hearing you talking from the adult perspective now. But I'm wondering, as a 15-year-old, and I'm sort of reflecting back, you know, it still wasn't that long that the incest stopped, but yet you felt that safety to be able to go to him. And so there must have been something in your 15-year-old mind that was adult-like, or maybe you just had no place else to go. I don't know.
I had nowhere else to go,
mm-hmm.
but I also knew at that age that I could get away or make sure I didn't get caught in that situation.
And
it's not like, okay, now you better watch out because this could happen. It's like it's just kind of built in, and I always say your stomach is your best indicator because, and I think most people can relate to that, even with the very innocence of saying you're talking with somebody, and you know, we always have our space around us where we're comfortable, and when people get too close, we start feeling uncomfortable.
Uh-huh.
And I always say that if your stomach is giving you those indicators, you probably better heed it.
Yep. Are your parents still alive?
No, they're not.
No. And how did you feel when they passed on?
My dad, I had actually talked to him on the phone about an hour before he died.
Uh-huh.
And at that time, I had been taking care of 8 families a week, so I did a lot with the elderly. And it was actually my mother that called me, but she was so upset, I actually thought it was one of my elderly people that I worked with.
Uh-huh.
And I lived about 11 miles from the farm, and she said, Daddy said to call and tell you. And I said, well, have you called an ambulance? And she said, they're on their way. And I said, I'll take off and go to the hospital. So
uh-huh.
instead of going to the farm, I drove on past the farm and went straight up to the hospital. And I remember pulling in the back, and I saw the door was open and the ambulance was still gone. But I thought, well, they're probably out on another call.
Uh-huh.
And I walked into the hospital, and I asked the nurse which room my dad was in. And the nurses kind of just looked at each other, and she said, well, they're not back yet.
Uh-huh.
Nothing was registering with me, and at that point she wanted to know if she could drive me out to the farm or go with me, and I said, I'll drive,
uh-huh.
and she went with me. And nothing clicked. I mean, when I turned the corner at the quarter-mile road to the farm, there were cars lined up. The ambulance driver was at the end of the driveway, and I remembered saying, well, why isn't he working on Dad? You know, Dad had died on the home place just as
uh-huh.
his dad had, in the same house, in the same room of the house. And so I was, of course, Mom just fell apart with all her mental issues and whatnot. So it was me having to take his clothing and go to the funeral home and bring his personal belongings home. And it had a very profound effect on me.
Yeah.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Inside Scoop Live is a global internet-based broadcast specializing in interviewing published authors about their current books and areas of expertise. I'm Juanita Watson, the host of the show, and invite you to join me as I bring to the air both well-known and upcoming writers. You will hear my guests talk candidly about their books, their life experience, specific topics, and the business of being an author in today's literary world. Always interesting and current, my intention is to bring our audience high-quality discussions that spotlight a vast diversity of authors in the field today. Our interviews are syndicated and archived for availability 24/7 through direct podcast and MP3 download. And as always, I love to hear from listeners. Have a look at our website, InsideScoopLive.com. Send me an email, comment on previous guests, and let me know who you'd like to hear on the show. I'll do my best to bring you your favorite authors live and direct.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. We're speaking today with Mary Nell Lunge, and as you have heard so far, gosh, Mary Nell is really open to talk about her own life and trials and tribulations she went through as a child. Certainly not an easy topic to talk about, especially when there is emotional pain involved. How old were you at that time, Mary Nell?
Yeah, I was born in 51, and Dad died in 79, so probably about 28.
Okay, still probably dealing with a lot.
Oh, yes, that was right in the midst of when I was going to college,
uh-huh.
and, you know, it was like I knew I was changing, I knew I was leaving my past behind me, but yet it's like you don't know what the new is going to be. Sometimes we'll
yeah.
hang on to negative things out of a not-so-healthy security blanket, kind of.
So, Mary Nell, in a death situation like this, when one of our loved ones passes on, there's, of course, the grieving process. And I'm wondering if some of the anger that, if any anger came up during your grieving process about the abuse, let's say, by your father.
It never did come up by my father. Now, I always had some anger issues, just plain always had issues with Mom. And if I felt anger towards anybody, it was towards her, because I think it's probably safe to say that the majority of us always feel that no matter what happens in life, our mother will be there to protect us. I kind of think that's just in us to feel that way about our mom.
Yeah.
And, of course, there was no protection from her. I needed protection from her rather than her protecting me.
Mm-hmm.
And she said and did some horrible things at the time that Dad died, and it was awful. It was just awful because there again, you know, we could have been a very good support system from each other. I don't feel the anger now because
mm-hmm.
looking back and everything I've studied and gone through and researched and everything, she was very miserable.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
Yeah, and mental abuse is mental issues. And
mm-hmm.
she should have never had children. I
mm-hmm.
can safely say that because she was not the loving mother type.
Mm-hmm.
And I have forgiven her. I think forgiving for me is very easy. It's the forgetting part, and you don't forget.
Of course not. Of course. This is something that's happened, so there is no forgetting. But as you say, forgiving is so important. Do you have any siblings?
I have 3 children.
No, siblings. Do you have any brothers and sisters?
I have 1 brother.
1 brother. Oh, yes, right. And so what's the relationship like with him now?
Well, it's been 13 years without any communication, and we've just started communicating, kind of taken baby steps at it within the last 6 months. And we are 2 very different individuals in a lot of ways, and yet there are some similar things we're discovering about each other. And I realized that while I had all this going on, you know, he became an alcoholic at the age of 15, 16 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he now feels bad that he wasn't there as the older brother. And I don't have any feelings about that at all. I don't view that it was ever his job or position to try to take care and protect me. I
mm-hmm.
guess because I've never had anybody do that, for one thing.
Yeah, your expectations definitely weren't
right
there.
Yeah.
So, Mary, now looking at what you have gone through as a child and into your teens, did that sort of fall into you how you chose your relationship as well?
Oh, yes. It's you don't see it, of course, but, of course, when you come out of abuse like I have, I pretty much was a sitting duck to get involved in an abusive relationship.
Uh-huh.
And I think mainly that goes back to you take the healthy child that had the very loving parents and told them they were good, they were smart, they could succeed, they could do anything. I think you go out into the world and you have a better gauge of who you want as a lifelong partner.
Mm-hmm.
Where for me, it was like, you know, I married the first guy that I ended up dating and stuff.
Sure.
He said kind things to me. Oh, wow, he told me he loved me, so that must mean he really loved me.
Yeah. And for you, growing up and what you did, you thought that was normal, but all of a sudden you had a glimpse. What I'm hearing is you had a glimpse of maybe what another normal was, and all of a sudden, like you say, the first boy that said he loved you or said kind things to you, it's like you were replacing the missing parts of what you didn't have.
Exactly.
And, of course, you just fall right into that.
Exactly. And then, you know, there comes
sure.
a time in your life where you have to realize there's no one out there that's going to fill those missing parts, and all that work needs to be done on the inside of yourself.
Oh, that's a big one, isn't it?
It is. And like I told my children, the longest journey you will ever take is the journey you take inside of yourself.
Oh, no kidding. You know, it's so... I have to admit this because I'm, you know, I can really relate to a lot of things that you're saying. And for me, it was to make that decision that, hey, this is really not working and I really do need to change my life.
Right. And it's, again, it's another scary process.
Oh, yeah.
But that's the part I say in the book, you know, yes, once you leave out of these situations, you're going to change. But it's
mm-hmm.
okay. It's okay mm-hmm. to change. It's okay to have fears about it. It's okay to go forward. And the one thing that you learn, and nobody learns it as they're going through it, it's when they look back and you learn that, you know, I probably left my first husband, probably left him 17 times before I made the break.
Yeah.
And I thought it was very terrible, but it's the breaking process.
Uh-huh.
And then you learn that you will not go back to what you went back to before. And if you should, you're not going to stay near as long.
Exactly. And, you know, when making that decision, it could be a really lonely place because, and scary too, because you really don't know. You're almost, you know, and I'm talking about myself, that I was in a comfortable place because this is how my life was. Yet I knew that it wasn't right, that there were other things, there was hope, there was just a lot of things that were much better than where I was in. But it was scary because then I thought, am I going to lose my family? Am I going to lose my friends? Am I going to lose this? Am I going to lose that? And that was just my biggest fear, is losing and abandoning. But as I know that, you know, once you take that step and make that decision, it's not easy, but boy, is it worth it.
And that's where, you know, for me personally, it's like I said, you know, most times people go through life, they don't know why they were born or what their purpose was.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
It's like when you're going through an abuse life, you don't even have time to entertain thoughts like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And, it's like the other part is how many of us grieve the loss of ourselves?
Uh-huh.
A lot of us never do because we're always with ourselves. And it's like I totally grieved the loss of myself, who I was in the past.
Uh-huh.
Because I went back and I stared into the closet where I hid so many times, and it was like, you're no longer in that closet. It's okay now. You're out, and it's going to be okay. And you have to let go of it. And it was, you know, I worried the whole time I was writing the book that perhaps I wouldn't have the words to express how things felt to me.
Uh-huh.
And that was the one thing I really hope that I did do.
Well, from what I've read, certainly I think you did. And, you know, we're not all going to be on the same page, but those that do parallel with you or do, you know, have the same circumstances, they will understand, and
right.
it'll bring up their own feelings.
Right.
Uh-huh. Mary Nell, do you have children?
I have three children.
You have three children. And a couple of things I want to ask about them. Are they, what was their pattern as they grew up?
Well, I remember when they laid my son, my firstborn, in my arms, and that overwhelming feeling of you're a mother. And it was like, what hit me was, how do I know how to even be a mother? I know that I don't want to be like the mom that I had. So I took the good qualities from the aunts that I loved, and I put along with that the way that I wished I would have been treated. And, you know, for the most part, well, it went wonderfully, except their father was a police officer and an alcoholic. And so, you know, I have the guilt of, there again, I made another bad choice, and it's not just me this time. There are three children involved with all this. And the one thing that I did, because most time parents only want to hear what they want to hear out of a child, and so I went one step further, and I told them, there is nothing that you can't come and say to me.
Uh-huh.
I'm not here to judge you. I'm here to be your parent and your friend and help you with the choices you make. But in the end, ultimately, you make the final choice. And so, you know, on one hand, it was very good, but on the other hand, it was very extremely stressful because they come to me with things most kids wouldn't go to their parents with.
But you opened the door, you know?
Yep, I did.
You did.
Mm-hmm. But it's sad today because both of my sons are hardcore alcoholics. And, you know, it's like having the degree in social work and knowing what tools to lay out there, and it doesn't matter if it's your own children or a total stranger, it has to be up to that individual to pick those tools up.
And, boy, that's the hardest thing for a parent to say.
It is.
You know, we can have all the degrees and all the knowledge, and we've read all the books, and, you know, we've written books and stuff, but still, as a parent, it is really difficult, and I need to commend you for being able to do that. I, as a parent, also had to go through the same thing. And definitely, you know, fortunately for our children, and I can say this because they're getting the permission, they're both in recovery and are, you know, working their program and have been for many, many, many years.
Well, I am happy for you. Wonderful, wonderful. I'm hoping to live long enough to see that same outcome.
Well, I hope so for you too. Gosh. So now I'm understanding that you've taken your experience and you're helping others.
Right. Right right now I'm kind of at a quiet time in life, which was okay because it helped me finally tackle in and, you know, get my book done and stuff. But I have severe heart condition and lung problem and stuff, so I'm having to take a different slant at life and less stressful.
Uh-huh.
And writing the book, of course, was a healing process for me as well. And learning to be able to step completely away from it and maintaining objectivity. And yes, I do, certainly. It's like you don't lay those tools down. You do not use them when you talk with others or you listen to their problems.
Uh-huh.
It's just easy for me to care, and it's easy for me to understand. And because I felt so alone, that's probably the biggest thing, is I don't want others out there to feel alone.
You know, I can really relate to that, too, because when I hear from my book that people read and they can parallel their lives, and mainly my thing was is to, you know, let them parallel and know that there is hope, that there is healing, and that they aren't alone. And it's exactly what you did, too.
Yes, it's that's kind of like the outcome and the positive on a bad situation. And I always, you know, like my daughter come down with cancer at the age of 14, and I remember telling my boys that there is something good going to come out of this. And, of course, they were angry, and what could come out of it? Well, as boys, they fought so horribly and didn't get along. They were 17 months apart. But during this whole process with her, they forgot about their little pickiness with each other, and they grew closer, and I actually got to see them hug each other when they returned from the military service and whatnot. And I thought that was the good in this. It brought them to a profound understanding that what you have today could be gone tomorrow.
Have your children read the book?
My daughter probably has been force-fed it some because for me it was very helpful to read it out loud.
Uh-huh.
But the kids are all very much familiar with what I went through and stuff. And the boys, you know, had a lot of anger. My middle one, he's so angry. And it's like, you know, he said, I would like to kill him for beating you up, my first husband. And I said, you know, I said, even if you did that, it wouldn't take away the beatings I went through. And I said, if you do anything, you should probably thank him. And he looked at me, and he said, are you nuts? I said, I want you to think about that.
Uh-huh.
If he had been very good to me, your children would have never been born.
Wow.
And I try to find the good and a bad, because that, to me, is what helps me on an even keel.
Exactly. And it's that hope and the healing. That's,
right.
That's the bottom line.
Mm-hmm.
And, gosh, this is, Mary Nell, I really, really enjoy talking to you, and I support you in continuing, you know, with your mission and helping people. And I think that writing a book like this is really important because it's not only cathartic for yourself. And I'm saying this because it was for me, but also it helps other people to know that they're not alone.
Well, and that was the thing. It's like, you know, yes, I wrote the book, but I don't care that my name is on it, because this book is about so much more than me as an individual.
Yeah.
Because I know there are thousands, hundreds of thousands of victims out there.
Yep, there sure are. And fortunately, the way our society is turning, more and more people are starting to come out and talk about it.
Exactly.
And get treatment or therapy or something to help them heal.
Right, right.
And books like yours just encourage people to be able to do that. And I just really commend you on that. Mary Nell, tell us your website address.
My website address is www.coming-full-circle.com. And I can say it's a beautiful website because I didn't make the website. I had a very good lady friend of mine. Her daughter designs websites, and she did it for me from her heart, and it is beautiful.
Yes, it is, and I just clicked on it, and it is, and I encourage our listeners to check it out because there's just more than about the book. There are inspirations and more about you, and I really encourage listeners to look within themselves and see what needs to be healed as well. And check out your book, because this could be just part of that healing process. So before we close, Mary Nell, is there anything that you would like to just close with and say to our listening audience?
Yes, I can promise you that you will gain some insight from the book, and I can promise you that while it starts out a sad story, there is a happy ending, and that we as victims can have a happy ending or have a happy life after abuse.
Oh, that's great, and that's, you know, that's so true. That's so true. Well, there you go, listeners. We've just had such a great time talking with Mary Nell and about her experience and the hope and the healing that really could happen after being abused, that she was emotionally, sexually, incest, and being really confused and got mixed messages from her family. But look what's happened now. She's able to write this book and through her own processes actually heal and help others. Again, thank you very much.
Well, I thank you very much. It's been good talking to you, Irene.
And this is Irene Watson with Inside Scoop Live. Thanks for listening. Bye for now.